From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Inner Richmond.
Lower Haight.
Burlingame.
Mission.
Potrero Hill.
Russian Hill since 1999. Love it.
Coming up, the first day of school is just around the corner. How will San Francisco cope with a shortage of teachers?
What we're starting to look at in San Francisco Unified is how do we actually get more folks to go into the teaching profession?
And we'll meet up with a woman who teaches blind people how to get around in the world.
You know, sometimes I'll have random pedestrians just like run up and be like, stop, you're about to touch a car, or there's like a table here, you know, and they're freaking out. And I'm just like, don't worry, chill.
Finding our way today on Cross Currents. San Francisco schools have a problem. With just over a week left before kids return to the classroom, the district doesn't have enough teachers to teach them. Specifically, they're short dozens of special needs teachers and assistants. Those are the people who teach students with learning differences, emotional difficulties, or other challenges, like autism. And it's not just a local problem. Last year, 49 out of our 50 states reported a shortfall in special ed professionals. So San Francisco has decided to do something it's never done before: offer signing bonuses. $4,000 for qualified applicants. KLW's Ben Trefney met up with SFUSD Human Resources Chief Monica Vasquez to talk about short and long-term solutions to the teacher shortage. And a note to our audience, KLW's license is held by SFUSD, where Ben's wife is a teacher.
For the past few years, it seems, and you would know better than I would, it seems like there's been a teacher shortfall that you guys have dealt with at the beginning of the year that you have to scramble and fix. Why is that?
So we are in the midst of a teacher shortage, both in California and nationally. And a lot of that can be attributed to when we were in a recession. So when we were in a recession, we were laying off teachers every year. And that sent a signal to young people who were going into choosing what profession they were going to pursue. They thought, there's not a lot of stability in teaching. I'm not going to pursue that. And so what we've seen now is a huge drop in the number of young people enrolling in teacher preparation programs. What we're starting to look at in San Francisco Unified is how do we actually get more folks to go into the teaching profession? So looking at our internal pipelines, looking at partnering with our Institutes of Higher Education, so San Francisco State, University of San Francisco, like how do we get the folks who maybe haven't thought about going into teaching to consider going into teaching?
And you have worked at the state level, and so you've seen this beyond San Francisco. How does San Francisco compare as far as these teacher shortfalls, just for some context?
We're right up there with the other large urbans like Sacramento and Oakland and Los Angeles Unified, and they're all going through a teacher shortage right now, and everyone is kind of trying to be innovative. And I know I heard an idea for special ed recruiting that I thought was a really good one, that's actually tapping our existing special ed teachers, and if they refer somebody, that teacher, the referring teacher, actually gets some sort of dollar amount bonus. And then if that teacher or the person that they actually refer gets hired and stays for a certain amount of time, they get a little bit more money.
That's something I think Netflix does too.
Right?
It's a very tech idea.
Refer a friend, right?
So I was looking at a study from 2014 by the National Council on Teacher Quality, and it found that when you adjust for cost of living, San Francisco teachers' pays ranked 123rd out of 125 districts around the country. So I'm wondering, what is San Francisco doing to make teaching a more sustainable profession, especially here, which has the highest rent in the nation by far?
Yes, we're absolutely an expensive city. There's no question about that. Our average salary, while it may not be enough, and we should pay teachers a lot more, the average salary in San Francisco Unified right now is $66,487. Dollars, and we pay about $26,000 in benefits. So the cost to the district per teacher is about 92,000. Some of the big efforts that we've done is collaborate with the city of San Francisco, so the mayor's office, as well as the teachers union, to really think about what are some solutions to housing for our educators. And so I know later this week I'll be meeting with Home Ownership SF, and they've been working. They're a nonprofit in the city that really works at educating its constituents, which are basically the people that live in San Francisco, around not just home ownership, but also rental applications. How do you create a good rental application? How do you make yourself desirable to a potential landlord? And so they are looking to really partner with us to do clinics, educational clinics for our educators. They met with the teachers union last week, and we're meeting with them later this week. And then also, I think this, we have a housing task force right now made up of the city of San Francisco, the teachers union, and San Francisco Unified, where we're looking at a multi-pronged approach, not just the assistance or subsidies, but also thinking about actual development, brick and mortar buildings, and how many units can be set aside for educators and those sorts of things. And that's, of course, long-term, but we're looking at both short-term and long-term. How can we help with the housing situation for our educators? Because we do know that this is an expensive city to live in.
How about just giving more money? Is that possible?
That is collectively bargained, right? So compensation in terms of salary is collectively bargained. So that's something that we would have to negotiate at the bargaining table.
Would it make sense to preemptively offer more money to teachers in San Francisco rather than waiting for a negotiation with the union?
Unfortunately, we can't do that without negotiating with the teachers union. So when you're in a collectively bargained environment, compensation, fringe benefits, all of that is negotiated. And even, for example, the bonus that we came up with, we had to negotiate that and write a side letter with our teachers union to make that a reality.
That's Monica Vasquez, head of human resources for the San Francisco Unified School District. She spoke with KALW's Ben Trefney. School starts a week from Monday, and the district still has 71 special education instructional positions to fill, 20 teachers, 51 aides. If it sounds like a fit for you, find out how to apply at KALW.org. Click crosscurrents. You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Imagine that one day you lost your sight, just like that. If you're a person who can see, close your eyes and give it a try. Maybe try and walk to your kitchen, walk to the bathroom. No cheating. If you're a person who's already blind or has low vision, you know what this is like. Getting around independently as a blind person means learning a specialized set of skills and new ways to use your senses. Producer Casey Miner tells us more in this episode of her podcast, The Specialist.
One day, in about 30 minutes, my vision just went from normal to dark. Like when you stand up too fast and your vision kind of blacks out. It was basically that, but it never came back.
You know, if you woke up tomorrow blind, I would probably be the first person that you would start working with.
I'm Casey Miner, and this is The Specialist.
Aim for the tactile mats and then locate a crossing beacon and then just listen for that.
I think you're going to do great.
All right.
Yeah.
Kat Jones and Marco Salsiccia are standing at a streetcar stop in San Francisco about four blocks from one of Marco's favorite lunch spots, Bacon Bacon. I'll just let you guess what they serve. Our objective, for Marco to walk there.
What would you do if you were here working and wanted to go get lunch at Bacon Bacon?
Probably cross at Fourth.
All right, let's do Fourth.
Yeah.
Marco's 31, tall, bearded, and dressed head to toe in San Jose Sharks gear. He is a super fan of the Bay Area hockey team. He works at the ride-sharing company Lyft as an accessibility specialist, helping them make their app usable for people who are visually impaired or blind, like he is.
So let's have you cross back to the other side of 4th, and we'll do that one more time.
Kat is an orientation and mobility specialist, that's O&M for short, at the Lighthouse for the Blind and Visually Impaired. She trains blind and low-vision people on the skills they need to get around independently, working together for as long as it takes.
I think stopping there at the very base of that curb cut helps, not just going for it.
Yeah. Well, that looked great. Let's go ahead and start figuring out the route to Bacon Bacon. I'd say sometimes this job feels a little bit like, you know, being a personal trainer or teaching someone how to ride a bike or, you know, dribble basketball. Is just a lot of it is physical repetition until you get that sort of muscle memory in place.
Her job is to help Marco interpret his environment using his other senses, mainly sound and touch. So picture this, the train stop where we're standing is on an island in the middle of the street. There's a pedestrian push button on Marco's right, the kind that makes a noise, vibrates, and tells you when it's time to cross.
Unfortunately, it's all the way on this side, so he has to kind of stand next to it over here if he wants to actually hear it.
But the edge of the curb is way over to his left, and that's where he needs to be to cross the street. So he has to choose. Does he stand where he can hear the signal telling him when his light is green? Or does he head for the edge of the curb, feeling for the bumps on the ground that let him know he's reached it, and where drivers can see he's about to cross? How do you decide which one you're going to do?
Well, this will get really loud, and in the time it takes me to get from here to this wall and orient to cross the street, there's enough time to also for me to listen if there are any cars that just missed it or are coming. Otherwise, I just line up and go for it.
Marco knows this place pretty well, so in this case, he actually does both. The light changes, and we go. This button's easy to hear, but let's say it wasn't. No problem. He'll just listen to the traffic. Interpreting that wall of sound is the first and biggest skill Kat teaches.
I definitely spend a lot of time just standing at a corner with a person, listening to cars, having them point at where they hear, they think the car is going, and then where they think the destination corner is going to be. And then we start practicing the actual crossings themselves, too.
Marco's been practicing these skills for a while now, but every new route is a new challenge. And in the 2 years since he lost his sight, he has never tried to walk to Bacon Bacon by himself.
Ready?
All right.
Okay, let's do it.
Marco walks in front, sweeping his long white cane out in front of him. Kat and I trail a few feet behind.
So he's doing a really good job with his cane. He's going wide enough to cover his body, and he's going fast enough so that it's in time with his feet. And that's what we try to look for. Sometimes people go too narrow or they go too slow, and then that can become dangerous. They end up missing things. And that could lead to potential, like running into obstacles or missing a drop-off.
We reach the corner, and what I see makes me nervous. First of all, the intersection is huge. There's tons of traffic, and metal streetcar tracks run down the middle.
Three lanes on either side plus the center two tracks. So this has got to be, you know, 80 to 100 feet and just barely enough time to make it over.
There's a crowd of kids crossing the road towards Marco, a guy on a scooter coasting obliviously, and a truck idling right in the middle of the crosswalk. Marco's headed straight for him. This is almost comically challenging, but Kat seems totally relaxed and everything goes smoothly. Marco goes around the truck and reaches the opposite sidewalk before the light turns red. Stage one, complete.
That was really good. How'd that go for you?
It's anxiety-inducing, but it worked.
Yeah.
Crossing a street, maybe it seems like a small thing, like 20 seconds of your day you forget about instantly. But I bet you like being able to do it by yourself, and Marco's no different. He'd had vision problems his whole life, starting with cancer that took his left eye when he was a kid. But that didn't stop him from doing things the way a fully sighted person would. If anything, he was an especially visual person, a game lover, movie buff, and professional animator. So on that bizarre afternoon when things started to go dark, he just figured he'd cope. He'd keep himself busy while he waited for his sight to come back.
I remember I got up and I vacuumed, expecting it to come back. I took a shower. It wasn't really coming back. And at that point, I started to panic.
He went to the doctor, who told him that after years of surgeries and infections, his other eye had just given out. What he could see was mostly gray.
And that's just kind of how it stuck.
Is that what you see now?
I would say it's like, imagine a letterboxed movie. So the top and bottom portion of my vision is dark. The central vision is gray. If I'm in a sunny day, I can kind of tell it's sunny. But if it's dark and gray, I can kind of tell that. And the very, very bottom portion of my vision has some sight. I can see movement. If I'm at a performance and there's a lot of light and I'm clapping, I can see my hands kind of moving. I can see a white plate on a black table, but I can't use anything of it. It's all very noisy.
So he can see a very little bit, but it doesn't help him get around.
Immediately, I was just trying to figure out how to live independently.
Remember, his response to his vision going dark was to clean his house and take a shower. Before long, he was cooking.
One of the first things I tried was scrambled eggs. I cracked eggs into a mug. I whipped them. I had a skillet on with some butter in it. Walked over to the skillet, poured the egg, completely missed the skillet. It went all over the range, down the stove, on the floor, and I didn't notice. I was pushing it around with a spatula. I could kind of feel some resistance, but it didn't feel like there was enough resistance when the egg solidified. So when I poured it onto a plate, I realized, wait a minute, I'm missing a lot. And from that point, I vowed to just, like, things have to be different.
Do you have it pretty well memorized as to where you're going? Do you remember how to get there?
It's a pretty straight shot.
On the route to Bacon Bacon, Marco's got an advantage. He's a visual person, he's got a visual memory, and he's spent a lot of time in this neighborhood. Kat does teach her students to work with GPS and smartphone apps that can help them find their way around new places. But right now, Marco knows where he is.
Unless things have changed. I know we're standing on the corner, the Safeway's right here. There's an angled door that brings us inside the Safeway. Caltrain's right behind us.
We start walking again, staying pretty far behind Marco, maybe half a block. And I ask Kat how she handles the kind of anxiety for him I felt back at that busy intersection. Actually, I want to know if she even has any. She says, no, not really, but other people do.
You know, sometimes I'll have random pedestrians just like run up and be like, stop, you're about to touch a car, or there's like a table here, you know, and they're freaking out. And I'm just like, don't worry, chill. Like, I'm a pretty chill person, and I think that works well for this job. It's just like, you know, like the cane's gonna find it, they're gonna be fine.
Remember, the point of doing this work is that eventually Marco won't need her. And learning to deal with well-meaning sighted people is a skill in and of itself.
Sometimes I actually do lessons where I step pretty far back from my student, so it looks like we're not together. I call those lessons lurking lessons. So I'm lurking behind them, and this gives the pedestrians around a sense that that person is by themselves. And if he looks like he's alone, a lot more people come up, and then the student gets that experience of what it's like to interact with the public.
Pro tip here, if you see a blind person walking down the street, do not run up to them and grab their elbow and start pushing them where you think they want to go. This is a big enough problem that Marco told me there's actually a move he learned to get out of it.
We learn a thing called the Heinz break, where if someone grabs my elbow, I can move my arm up across my body and that disengages their grip. So you can stop it before they push you somewhere and you can just say, no, thank you.
So if you see a blind person who seems like they might need help, Marco says just let them know you're there and ask if you can assist them, you know, just like you would anyone else.
Looks like he found some bike racks.
We catch up and find Marco's hit a wall, literally. He's gotten stuck in a corner where a building kind of juts out.
I found your mommy burger.
So what happened right there?
I was hugging the wall too much.
This is something Kat cautions her students against. It's tempting to stay close to the wall while you're walking because you know you're far away from the road. But that means things like driveways and oddly shaped buildings can trip you up.
There's a slight beer in block at the breezeway. But you figured it out. You got yourself out. Great.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. Like, it's not a big deal if there's like a little mess up. The bigger thing is, can they get themselves out? I care more about that skill than being perfect every single time, because you're never going to be, even the best cane traveler in the world, it's going to have a lot of things happen where they're going to have to problem solve and get themselves out. And that's really what's important.
Right. How do you feel? Like, you're kind of giggling right now. Like, what, how do you feel when you encounter a situation like that?
It's silly. I used to really take it pretty hard, because I'm coming from being a pretty crazy perfectionist. And so I get pretty, when we started all of this, I was getting really angry with myself when I made a mistake like that. But now it's easier. It's like, okay, it's all jazz. It's all improvisation. I've made a mistake. Let's figure this out. And it's also, I can just imagine myself visually what it must look like with me floundering around trying to figure it out. And that's what makes me laugh.
Obstacle conquered, we continue. And after one more street crossing, we've arrived on the same block as Bacon Bacon. Now, things get more subtle.
So let's go ahead and just kind of walk down the sidewalk and see what features we find as we go. So that slight slope up is the entrance to the donut shop right there.
What'd you just say you were going to do?
Follow my nose.
Got it.
Gotta use every sense I can.
Sometimes that can actually be a huge thing. Like, if you pass like a particular location that smells like laundry or baked bread, you know, and it's consistently like that, it can be a decent landmark.
Kat lets Marco know that the restaurant has a sandwich board outside. Might not always be there, but could be helpful.
How's it smell? Oh, there it is. You can smell the bacon.
There we go.
All right, let's go past it so you just know what's right after Bacon Bacon.
Yeah.
We walk a little farther past the edge of the building.
Right here, should seem a little bit different. What do you notice?
It's open air.
Yep. So this opens up into the McDonald's parking lot, which is right next to it.
Oh,
so you
yeah.
know if you get that breeze or that open sound that you've gotten too far.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll pretty see. Easy to find.
Marco now has all the skills and information he needs to get to Bacon Bacon on his own. When he tries again, he most likely won't need to ask anyone for help. But soliciting assistance, as he and Kat call it, is another major skill. It can seem like a paradox, becoming fully independent by learning when to rely on others. Think about riding a new bus a bit too far, or figuring out if you're on the same side of the street as that coffee shop you're trying to find.
And it doesn't mean that they're necessarily fully dependent on other people. It just means that they are able to quickly and swiftly interact with a public member to get a piece of information that otherwise is very challenging for them to access because they don't have that visual component.
The cane is the same way.
Originally, when I had all my low vision problems, I absolutely didn't want to use the cane when I could still sort of see. I don't know if I felt that it was embarrassing, because it calls you out immediately that there's something wrong, especially being so fiercely independent that now you're using this cane was like a marker that you'll always need help.
But at some point, his relationship to his cane changed.
This is now my vision with this cane. This represents all my new skills. This is how I'm going to have to get around now. It's just like, yep, it's normal. It doesn't bother me anymore because this is what I need to use. And it's like, okay, what's the next step?
We head back towards Marco's office, and after two more crossings, tricky again, the push buttons are either too quiet or non-existent, so Marco needs to use the sound of idling engines to get across. We make it back to the building and into the lobby.
So do you feel like you could go to Bacon Bacon during your lunch break on your own with some amount of confidence? Or at least with a coworker?
Yeah, the coworker, I think, for now, so I can do that reverse route.
If we did it one more time, you might feel like you could go on your own.
Probably, yeah.
Okay, cool.
Yay.
There's a Veterans Administration film from the 1950s advocating for exactly the kind of job Kat does. It shows a blind veteran trying to go about his daily life, but being thwarted at every turn by well-meaning family members. Don't fiddle with the radio or go for a walk, they say. Let us help you.
Charles, you know you can't go out alone. You might get hit by a car. Wait till Dad gets home. He'll take you for a walk.
specialist like Kat is going to get a person like Marco as far away from that as possible. So many things can be adapted. Marco has season tickets to Sharks hockey games. He uses a radio to hear them. He loves the card game Cards Against Humanity, so he's brailing his own set. And don't think that the former animator has stopped watching movies. There's a special setting on Netflix for audio description.
A rift in the shape of an elongated letter R forms in darkness.
Actors describe what's going on in between bits of dialogue.
Light pours through, then the R solidifies, becoming metallic, reflecting light, Regency.
Yeah, that's another specialist.
That piece was sound designed and mixed by Seth Samuel. Find out how to subscribe to the Specialist podcast at kalw.org. If you know of a job that would be fascinating to learn about, we want to hear about it. Email us at news@kalw.org. We love hearing from you because we are local public radio. Our team includes Jürgen Klemm, Leela Day, Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Meredith Hodnott, Ted Muldoon, Lisa Morehouse, James Rollins, Raja Shah, Stephen Short, and Judy Silber. Today's show is engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Hannah Kingsley-Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. You're listening to the music of the Bye Bye Blackbirds from Oakland. They describe themselves as torchbearers for harmony-laden guitar pop in the 21st century. The Bye Bye Blackbirds will be on stage at the Ivy Room in Albany on Saturday night with two other bands. Music starts at 9 o'clock. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.